This is Perspectives with Barry Shainbaum. Recorded in the heart of downtown Toronto, we explore different viewpoints on life through interviews. This interview originally aired on October 11th, 2010, for Faith FM in Kitchener, Ontario. It has been abridged to keep the focus on the amazing Kreskin.
This is Perspectives with Barry Shainbaum on Faith FM and Hope FM 94.3 in Kitchener and Woodstock, and on Grace FM 105.9 in London, Ontario.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in. On the show today, the amazing Kreskin, and later on the show, singer-songwriter Roger Joycey is in studio. Before we get to the art of illusion and mind-reading abilities of amazing Kreskin, let's look at another potential type of illusion. It is a year since the World Health Organization declared a global pandemic of swine flu, triggering health emergencies around the planet. In November 2009, Dr. Shiv Chopra was on the show. Dr. Chopra is a former Health Canada scientist. He said the swine flu was overstated, and he called the World Health Organization the World Whore Organization. The Council of Europe, comprised of 47 member states, recently reported that the seriousness of the pandemic was vastly overrated at the onset. In addition, the British Medical Journal reported that specialists with ties to the drug industry were involved with WHO pre-pandemic planning. And the WHO changed their definition of a pandemic in May 2009 after the first cases of swine flu were reported. The change seems to have removed the requirements that a virus's impact be severe before a pandemic is declared. This gives us all much food for thought. Possessing a showman's flair, a comedian's wit, and capacities of a bona fide mentalist, the amazing Kreskin has for over four decades dramatized the powerful facets of the human mind. Kreskin's unique ability to find hidden objects emerged by the age of five during childhood games. Kreskin insists there is nothing supernatural about his mental abilities, and that few of us have tapped more than a fraction of our mental potential. He states that anyone can condition mind and body to release the extraordinary strengths and abilities of the unconscious mind. The amazing Kreskin has appeared on The Johnny Carson Show 88 times, and on Regis and Kathy Lee over 100 times. And he previously had a TV show broadcasting in Ottawa, Ontario. Kreskin's latest book is called Kreskin Confidential. The amazing Kreskin joins us by phone from Montclair, New Jersey. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome to the show.
Barry, it is so great to talk to you. I'll tell you something, that sometime when I'm in your area, I'll have to come on the show live because... It would be great to work together. But I also have to say, and I'm telling this to the listeners because I mentioned it to you before we went on the air.
Yes.
I was looking on the internet, and I know you're an inspirational speaker, and I've got to read your book, Hope and Heroes, because that's got to be absolutely fascinating. You evidently went to a number of prominent people to put together in the book. Am I correct, Barry?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I read a great deal, even if I'm trying. I read four books a night, and I've never bragged about this. I don't really talk about it that much, but the BBC came to my home last year. I built a house just for my books, which are over 9,000 now, the largest, actually, in the areas I'm most interested in. But I've read over 1,000 biographies, because since my work deals with the way people think, I just find it fascinating to learn what factors have made people in their lives pivotal changes. And I, by the way, I found very fascinating the period where you're suffering from emotional problems, mental illness, and so forth, that you sat in a park each day, often watching people pass by. Am I correct, Barry?
I fed the pigeons, but I also spent equally long times in the library during my darkest days 22 years ago, when I used to suffer from bipolar disorder.
Yes, yes. And, you know, the library, was an immense factor in my life. Now, I haven't been to libraries for years because I built my library, but I literally lived in, and when I finished school, grade school during the day and then high school, I would go into the public library, and by the time I was in sixth grade, I had read every single book in the children's library, so the librarians opened the upstairs where by eighth grade I had read all the psychology department. But you know, and I say this to all of you listening in because I travel the world. I'm only home 4 days a month.
Oh, my God.
As a matter of fact, the airline industry announced a year ago, March, that I have, at that point, flown a little over 3 million miles. So I'm on the road, Barry, most of the time. But I say this to people very often in conferences and what have you. If someone comes up to you, anybody, and says to you that they're bored, you're looking at a boring person because all you have to pick up, as you know, Barry, is a book, and you can travel the vast earth. Am I correct, Barry?
You are so, so very right. But Kreskin, at age five, you were, in a sense, reading classmates' minds. Did you find that exciting, strange, or scary?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. Talk about inspirations in my life. And I really am not the opinion, even though no one ever taught me to do what I do, I'm not the opinion that anybody is a totally self-made person, because I think along the line, if we think about it, there are individuals who played pivotal forces in our life. It could be a doorman. It could be a teacher. It could be someone that got in a conversation to us and said something. When I was 5 years old, I was visiting relatives in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and I'm at the Polish side of my family, and a young man, he seemed like an older person, then gave me a comic book. And in the comic was a character called Mandrake the Magician. That was written by Lee Falk, whom I got to know later on in my life. And he really wasn't a magician. He had hypnotic abilities, telepathic abilities, and he solved crimes and what have you. That comic, which I treasure, I have it here in my home, I knew I'm going to be like this person. This is going to be the person I'm going to be a part of. And then and I imitated and play-acted I was him and what have you. And then 9 years old, a second pivotal moment happened in my life. We were in grade school. I was in third grade. And it was raining outside, so Miss Curtis, our teacher, we couldn't go out and play during play period, so we played in the classroom, and she had a game for us. And she had someone leave the classroom, Barry. The girl's name was Jane Hamilton, I can remember vividly. And we hit a beanbag somewhere in the classroom, and Jane comes in, and she's walking around, and we say to her, Jane, you're getting warmer, you're getting colder, and so forth. It's a game called Hot and Cold, which many of us played, many kids played as kids. Mm-hmm. I was so darn disappointed I wasn't picked to play. So, and she found the beanbag, and she said, you're getting hot, 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 and what have you. So I'm walking home from school because school was a mile away, and all my life from kindergarten to high school, I walked to school, thank goodness, because it gave you exercise.
That's right.
To breathe the fresh air. And I said, I want to play this with my brother. My brother's 3 years younger. My mother was at work. My father was at work. My mother was shopping. So I went over to my grandparents' house, and they were from Sicily. This is my Italian side of the family. And my grandfather had built the house with his own hands. They rented the downstairs to make ends meet. And I said, Joey, go upstairs and hide a penny. And he goes up into my grandparents' house and hides a penny. He calls me. And I walk upstairs. And Barry, it's as if it happened yesterday, or I'm looking at a video playback. I walk quietly and saunter through the kitchen. My grandmother didn't know what was going on. She didn't speak much English. I walked into Michael's bedroom. He was at work, climbed up on a chair, and reached, as I was short, of course, reached behind a curtain rod and felt the penny. And then it dawned on me, I forgot to tell my brother to speak to me. He never said a word. So this got around the family.
Wow.
Of course, superstitions take place. Does he have the evil eye and all that jazz?
Wow.
But it was the turning point, and teachers in grade school had me perform. And by the time I was 12 years old, 13, 14 years old, I did a two-hour concert for my junior high school. And so was the evolution of my career. But one little other point I got to mention.
Okay.
One, now in high school, and I was doing shows for parties and maybe little banquet affairs and organizations, and I would perform locally in town for a synagogue group, and it was all men's group. And after the show, the rabbi worked, said to me, "Young man, I want you to come to my quarters tomorrow." I certainly will, sir, because the synagogue was only about 4 minutes from the high school. And then that night I didn't sleep, and I'm thinking, oh my God, what's he going to say to me today?
Right, right.
Wrong or whatever. So Barry, the next day, I'm in high school then, and ninth grade, and I walk over to Rabbi Werps at quarters of Nakandar, come in. He says, sit there, young man, and he sits at the desk, and Barry, he's writing. And when he finishes, he says, now you take this. This is a testimonial, and you use this to get more work. Can you imagine how exciting that was in my life?
Very, very true. Question for you. Why you? Why you, and why you at such a young age did these abilities, connections manifest in you?
Well, Barry, you said something earlier, and I know you feel this way, that we all have tremendous potentials in our life. We can change our own lives. And by the way, parenthetically, we have become in the Western world, so many kids have been brought up with an ideal of an entitlement, which is very, very sad, because if we're going to blame others, blame the government, blame everything else, what's happened to us, then go into our distant past or grandparents, we really aren't looking at things the way we need to realize that we take our own responsibility. And consequently, we can change things in life.
But Creston, why you?
I so believe, Barry, I so believed in what I did.
Okay.
That I was blessed, that I became interested in what I do, because as a kid, nobody as yet had had the chance to teach me that these things couldn't be done. Had I gradually evolved and only discovered these potentials, maybe in my teens or what have you, I would have had peer pressure and so forth. Well, this can't be done. You can't make a living doing this. It's not even possible. But Barry, I was so filled with an absolute conviction that I don't think anything would have changed me. I got to know pretty well a writer whom I know you must be familiar with, Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. Years ago, Dr. Peale and I toured the world, and I was touring Italy and performing for some business groups, and he happened to be lecturing at them. And after that, we must have corresponded through hundreds and hundreds of mails. And he said, you know, Creskin, your belief and your potential really strengthen what you can do. And of course, as you know, I'm sure that's part of the philosophy when you speak it with your inspirational commentary and whatever, you know, Barry.
True. You talk about the power of suggestion, and that you don't really believe in hypnosis. It's more of persuasion. Is that still your belief system, that hypnosis doesn't really exist?
Very much so. And it was a dramatic changing point in my life. This sounds like science fiction. This doesn't sound like it'd be possible. So the richness of what's happened to me, as people have been saying in the past few years, my life has been like an adventure.
Right.
Here I am, Barry, around 18 years old. I'm performing now. Now I'm not performing around the world. I'm performing in the East Coast mainly because I hadn't been on television then. And a man comes to me and says, his name is Dr. Harold Hansen. He was a psychologist from Denmark, a clinical psychologist, a very, very fine person. And he said, Creskin, I want you to see my wife. I said, what do you mean, Dr. Hansen? He said, I've watched you perform. And while you do, you're reading people's thoughts, the second half of your program deals with hypnotic phenomena. I'd like my wife to have her child without any anesthetic. Could you see if you could hypnotize her? And I said, well, have you looked at... He says, well, I've gone to Dr. Milton H. Erickson, Milton Klein. These were pioneers in the 50s and part of the American Society of Clinical and Experimental Hypnosis, which became international. I said, well, you've gone to all these people. He says, you have a different approach. So the bottom line is, he and the family became very close. She had her child without an anesthetic. I was able to condition her. So he came to me. And Barry, he says, I'm going to give you an office. I said, Dr. Hansen, what do you mean? He says, I want you to see, when you can, 20 or 30 different patients a week and see if you can support my treatment. Now, he was a clinical, so I had no degree then. I hadn't even started studying psychology at Seton Hall. And I went on for 7-8 years until my career got very, very busy. And I couldn't really spend, because my real life was in my public performances and my communicating with the audiences. But in the last couple of years, I said, Harold, this business of hypnosis, I want to tell you, some of the people don't seem to go into a trance, yet they're improving. He's now riding an elevator, even though it was claustrophobic. He's now goes to the synagogue or to church in a crowd, and he doesn't run out because he's not. I said, I'm able to make changes. I think there's something that we're not touching. I said, I'm going to see in my performances what I can do without putting a person in a trance. and I felt by suggestion, by arresting their attention, I was able to do the same thing, and then science has shown there's no evidence of any real change in the brain when a person seems like they're under hypnosis. I'm not saying people are faking under hypnosis, but they're wide awake, and it is this power of suggestion. And by the way, I'm very proud of this. In the United States today, there's almost no state that allows hypnosis evidence in the courtroom because of my findings and my appearances in the court that show that the suggestion is the potential, and suggestion can alter memories. So we really cannot trust what seems to happen out of these deep trances. And by the way, the laws have been changed. Even just recently in the state of Kansas, they abandoned the hypnosis law because they said, if what Kreskin says there's no trance, then this whole thing doesn't make sense. But, Barry, we have forgotten the power of suggestion. Just as you mentioned earlier, statements by certain groups that a certain disease is going to become rampant in our culture could cause panic. Let's not forget that in 1938, a man came along and decided on the radio to reproduce H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. I got to know that man very well. And that man was Orson Welles, who panicked in the United States, the public, because they were hearing what seemed so convincingly could happen. This could happen today if someone got a hold of a cable television station. They could create panic in certain cities of a country because suggestion does work. The only protection is that we have such a proliferation of media and stations that the competition would cause people to doubt what was going on. So suggestion is a tremendous power.
If you've tuned in late, this is Perspectives. My name is Barry Shanebaum. We broadcast on Faith, Hope, and Grace FM, Kitchener, Woodstock, in London, Ontario. My guest on the line is a man who spent many years in Canada. His name is the amazing Kreskin, on the line from Montclair, New Jersey. Kreskin, why are we as humans so susceptible to persuasion and suggestion? Because it's not always to our advantage what we are receiving through the media or through governments or other persuasions.
No, we're not. It's not always the best thing for it. First of all, suggestibility has nothing to do with intelligence. The idea years ago, all of the Svengali movies and Dracula and so forth, that people are with weak wills or influence. Actually, people who are most suggestible and responsive to suggestion are usually artistic people, people who can empathize with others, who can feel the way other people feel, can take on an idea and almost experience the feeling of the idea, because the suggestion taps one of the most powerful forces that we have in our minds and so forth, and it is the imagination. But at the same time, when we have people of authority promulgate ideas, this unfortunately gives credibility where maybe the credibility is not warranted. By the way, let's go back to our childhood. Remember, years ago, Johnny bumped his head and he comes in crying, and Mommy goes over to him, kisses him on the forehead and says, "We'll make the boo-boo go away."
And it goes away, right?
Stops crying, yeah, and he goes out and plays, doesn't even think about it and so forth. But there's a tremendous responsibility in what we say to others. You know, I've said this to audiences for years. We need to understand something. And I know a lot about my work and my field, but I know very little about many things and nothing about most things. But we should remember, you can only meet a person for the first time once in your life. And somehow, the way you touch them can linger the rest of your life in relationship with them. Those early moments which we think, well, I got to correct myself later on. What we say to a person, how we touch them, and I don't necessarily mean figuratively, but I mean in our remark, can really be often a changing thing in their life. You can change a person, and if you can do that, you can do it to the good. I have to tell you something. You mentioned my series. In the 70s, I did a series called The Amazing World of Kreskin, and I need to, because Canada is my second home. I tour there 5, 6, 7 weeks a year, but I must tell you how that came about.
Okay.
A man whom I didn't know, and I'm touring the United States, was evidently attending like 30, 35 shows in 1 month. In different cities I was in.
That is a lot.
The audience, he had gotten my tour, and he was sitting in theaters and university audiences and what have you. And they came to me, and they said, "We're with the CTV network. We really think there should be a television show built around you. Watched you on Carson in those days. There were other shows like Merv Griffin and what have you. Just like today, we have Letterman, who talked about me last week on two of the shows. But anyway, so I went to Canada. We did a couple of pilots, very unhappy with the pilots. And so was the network, but they say, we believe in you. I said, well, this person you brought as a consultant from the States, he's got me, it's not the way I work. I need to talk to my audience. I need to pace myself. Anyway, we finally did a pilot. And the series was on almost for 6 years. And as people remind me, the first 2 years, it was the second highest rated program in Canada. But the first couple of years were in Ottawa. Then we did in Toronto, then in England, because the show was finally being seen all over the world. I got to tell you a postscript.
Okay.
And talk about the excitement in life. This year in the United States, a web company called Hulu, which does commercials in the States, H-U-L-U, has now taken on one season of the series. They've got sponsors, and now people are seeing some 30-some shows that originated in Canada. They look like they're brand new, and I just hope we're going to find an outlet in Canada because we have to have them seen. The other thing I got to tell your listeners is...
And all in one breath, too.
I'd like to look on YouTube, and I'm overwhelmed with this.
Right.
People have sent the past month videos of appearances of mine, recent ones with Jimmy Fallon, Mike Huckabee.
So, Kruskin, I want to jump in here. I've seen that a couple of times. Mike Huckabee in you. I've seen it basically. You will shuffle some cards. He says stop. He chooses the card. He doesn't look at it. Everyone in the audience has one card before they sit
right.
down. What's
crazy about that?
How does it work? You walk into the audience. You find the person who has the card that matches Mike. You don't know either one. How does it work in your mind that you can do this sort of thing?
Well, let me tell you, it's interesting because, and by the way, there are now, as of 3 days ago, almost 200 videos that people have sent. We're overwhelmed with what's happening. But let me tell you what happened, because the test failed a few years ago on the Regis Philbin show, and I've done now 104 or 5 shows with him, and Regis and I've known each other for years. But here's what had to happen.
Okay.
I had to finally, and in the case of Huckabee, he had to, with my back to him, cite the card so he could think about it. When he took it, he had it face down, but he cited and thought about it. I had everyone in the audience, we turned our back, look at what they were sitting on, and then, of course, they put the card back on their seats.
Right.
What I had to do when I walked through the audience, everyone had to think of their card, is sense who in the audience was thinking of the card that matched his. Now, in the case of Huckabee, which was a stroke of brilliance on the part of the producer, they had in the audience exactly 52 people. They limited that night, and of course, there's 52 cards in the deck. In the case of Regis, a couple of years ago, that wasn't the case. The crew handed out 4 or 5 decks of cards because, of course, his audience numbers at 200 and some people. I think I became confused, but there's something that the public doesn't know about. I did not find the right person because, obviously, there were many duplicates of cards because there were 3 or 4 decks, and I was very frustrated and disappointed. However, when we went to a break, I looked and I said, where is one of the persons who has the card that Regis had? And she stood up. Do you know, it was crazy. She was almost in the same outfit as the woman that I went to who was the wrong person. The viewers never knew this.
Wow.
So a lot of quirks happened that I really can't explain. Barry, what happened there. But it makes my work exciting. And by the way, I have to tell you what has been written about all over the world because it's the feature of my performances. And incidentally, last year, Tom Hanks came out with a movie called The Great Buck Howard. And John Malkovich, as they announced at the end, he's literally playing me in the movie. And it was very moving to have someone do a movie when you're still alive and have a pivotal character of the movie. You're truly.
Preston, you're 75 years old now?
Pardon me?
Are you 75 years old now?
I'm 75 years old of January 12th. I keep getting parties where I'm performing. I said, my birthday was in January. They said, no, Preston, we got to still celebrate it. But the bottom line is, the key theme, I don't want to ruin the movie if people want to rent it or see it, but the key theme is something associated with me. In all my performances, when they're full evening shows or hour and a half performances, or my shows are usually 2 hours and a half in length, we have a committee from the audience. I turn my check over to them, my fee for the evening, and I leave the auditorium guarded by some of the committee. While I'm out of the auditorium, my check is hidden by the committee anywhere within the auditorium, anywhere, and they return to the stage, and the ushers bring me back in. And it's made very clear that I did not know what happens. The bottom line is, and it goes back to that incident when I was a kid and the penny. The committee concentrates. I do not talk to them. There's no communication at all. If I do not find my fee, I don't get paid. And as you can, I'm sure would agree, Barry, it's a crazy way to make a living. I have failed 9 times, and people can say, well, that's not many out of 6,000. It may not be many. But one incident has lingered in my life as an unforgotten, as a remembered remembrance. In New Zealand, one night, my first tour there, and I love the country, it was in a Coliseum, and I just could not find the check. I couldn't grapple with it. The thought patterns weren't clear, and I forfeited my fee. The next day, there was a national press conference because we turned the money over to Crippled Children's Hospital. Okay. I had lost in one night $51,000.
Wow. Now, Creskin, help us understand. You're in an audience. Do you get a vision, a feeling, a sense? How did you know what card Mike Huckabee chose? And how did you know that one woman who even told you the wrong color of the card, you still knew it was her? How does it come to you?
Well, it comes to me when folks may look on, if they can get Hulu and see the half-hour series. There was always, and the CTV people insisted I keep it part of my program, there was always a segment, as is part of my theater appearances, where I'm reading the thoughts of members of the audience.
But how does it work?
Before, just recently in Vegas, I told one gentleman who was thinking of two of his pets, he and his wife were there. I said, did you tell your wife earlier, I wonder if you could tell me my army number? And he slammed his fist down. He says, my God, that was at dinner at another place in Vegas. Well, it was in the Second World War. He was on in years and what have you. I got every single digit of his army number. He said, nobody knows it. People don't talk about their army numbers.
Creskin, how?
He saw them pictured. He pictured each of the digits. In the case of the numbers, I couldn't just reel them off. He had to think of each one as a separate target. In the case of an incident of a playing card or a scene that someone is thinking of in their life, they have to really see and picture the image. The problem, and I rarely want to talk about this because I don't want to create my own problems. The problem in some of the difficulties in finding my fee is that if a committee member doesn't think of where it's hidden, Barry, as God is my judge, there's no way on the face of the earth I could possibly find it. I always have a committee of 4, 5, or 6 people. But I have found my check at a Bob Hope dinner, and that was the first time I had seen him, and I got to know him after that in appearances. I found my check. I went to the dais, and it was at the Waldorf with 1,500 radio and TV and newspaper writers. I kept lifting up this dish, which had carved turkey on it. Well, there was no check under the dish, and I got flustered. And he said, Creskin, I didn't want to give you any clue. He said, I didn't want to tell you. He said, but I kept thinking, I hope you go on with this. The committee person, I said, do you know where it's hidden? And she got angry. She said, of course I do. I looked at her and said, oh, my God. I took off my jacket, rolled up my sleeve against all judgment. I shoved my hand into the stuffing. They had cooked it in the stuffing of the turkey.
Wow.
And at a university show a few years ago in the States here, it was about 3,000 people. It was a family weekend, so there were parents, mainly students. I walked up. It was at University of Illinois. I walked up to a gentleman, and he's very distinguished looking. He was in a suit, and I had him stand. I said, oh, my God. Sir, I've never asked anybody to do this. Would you open your mouth? Well, there was no check. And I said to him, sir, this is insane. Does it have to do with the roof of your mouth? And Barry, the vision that I can see this moment, he reached into his mouth, took out his upper plates, and handed me the check.
No, Creskin, you...
I know. The wildest, because Barry, my career has been an adventure. That's all I can
Creskin,
say.
Creskin, I think your career has been an adventure. So you shared with, in a sense, when the person thinks of it, you can connect with their mind. Can you tell our listeners today, how can we replicate, even in the smallest or larger way, how you do? Do we have the ability to do what you do?
Yes. Barry, I really think to a degree. Now, not everybody's going to be a concert violinist. Not everybody's going to be a pianist. Not everyone's going to... own a large company or what have you, and I don't necessarily to this extent because this has been my lifestyle. But at the same time, and I've done a lot of seminars in the month of August. Kevin Trudeau, who does a lot of the infomercials, is going to begin my doing seminars in different parts of the world, 4 or 5 hour ones, because I've done them for private groups of maybe business people, through the years, but kept it kind of confidential. But I was in, I was out of the country doing a concert for him for 100 and some, an audience from 100 and some parts of the countries of the world. And, you know, he said, have you shared what you do? And I said, well, I've given seminars, but they require time. But one of the things I said to audiences is this. We don't pay attention to each other anymore. We don't listen as much as we once did. Much of the Western world is becoming a socially dysfunctional people because we spend so much time in front of a box, in front of a machine, looking at pictures, typing something, that we're not, when we're with people, as often as tuned in. How many times do you go to a restaurant? I think this is an abomination. And people are sitting on a cell phone while they're with someone else. I say to my friends who all know this, unless it's business, if someone starts a cell phone with your wit, just get up and leave. Because life wasn't meant to be that way. Life was meant to be the kitchen table life. And many reporters in Canada, when I make commentaries each year about how the world is changing it from my viewpoint, since I'm traveling endlessly, I have said Kreskin has a kitchen table philosophy. Years ago, when we were kids and you went to a person's house, you sat around the kitchen table. You didn't even spend much time in the living room because you just talked around the table, often touched each other in comments and commented. When we're with people today, for goodness sakes, listen to what they're saying and kind of pause from time to time and see if you can get a feel of what was behind the words. We sometimes talk more when we're not speaking. We really shouldn't be afraid of silence. I jog an hour every night. Between 4 and 5 in the morning, I run. I do not wear earphones. Damn it, I want to hear nature. Because, you know, we are sharing this earth. And part of the earth is the animals on earth and the insects and weather. And I think that way because every entrepreneur, and you're one of them, Barry, has found the world a way to stop and get off. But the important thing is when we're with a person today, listen to what they're saying and try to put yourself in their shoes. I've often said in my life, I borrow from the American Indian who said you don't judge someone else until you walk in their shoes. You understand what I'm saying, Barry?
Very well said. So by connecting and listening and being present with another person, Barry, and feeling, we have a greater ability to not only understand people, but to maybe find the hidden penny or find the secret or something.
Or something hidden in both your lives that's a common denominator. A few months ago, I wrote an extensive article on one of the internets in which I associated hypnosis with love. Now, that sounds crazy. I think that was Kreskin out of left field just for publicity? No. If we study the early days of psychological writings and the writings of Freud and Breuer, they associated hypnosis with love because love was a non-critical state of mind. It is still to this day. And since suggestibility is non-critical, there are facets in our lives that have hypnotic-like qualities. So if we can feel the way someone feels and kind of get in it, remember this, the word sympathy is to understand how somebody thinks. When I was a little boy, one of the inspirations and influences of my life was a man on radio who was the most powerful single figure in the history of U.S. broadcast. Today, he's a forgotten giant. He was on CBS 5 mornings a week for live television and radio. He was on every Wednesday night for an hour on CBS television. He was on every Monday night. His name was Arthur Godfrey. Okay. And interestingly enough, had the United States fallen in 1952 and the president and vice president would have been assassinated, it was quietly decided that Arthur Godfrey would take over the nation. He was an entertainer. He's talked to the audience, had talent on him, what have you. Why him? Because there was a tremendous trust in the man. When he took over the nation, it was to tell people, get to your radios, TVs, I'll talk to you until we get the country back in place and the real leaders will be there because of the bond of trust. But to describe him, psychologists coined a term, and the term is common today. It was called empathy. Because empathy was not understanding how someone thinks. It was feeling the way someone thinks. And to be very honest with you, Barry, in these latter moments of our talk, that's one of the secrets to what I do in my life.
empathy. Before you go and leave us on this nice Sunday afternoon, do you have one or two or three predictions on anything that you would like to share with us today?
Well, every year, and I never wanted to make predictions because I'm not a psychic, I'm not a fortune teller, but CNN came to me in 2000, before 2001, and said, listen, Kreskin, you travel so constantly, you've got to have a sense of what is going on, a feeling of what is taking place. Some very interesting, I'm going to go into left field because some of the more dramatic ones, I'd rather hold back now. Our world is, some of the symptom, of course, is what's happening with the oil and what
right,
have you, and
right.
That's causing, changing the lives of so many, many people.
It's a horrible event.
I want to say this, and with our economy suffering as much as it is, I want to share something I say to students. I am not a doomsday person. I otherwise I wouldn't be doing what I've done through my life. But to the young people, with the economy as tough as it is, there are less jobs in the Western world than there were some years ago. There are less jobs than there are people. And people coming out of college don't have suddenly, I tell college students, you know, when you graduate, or high school students, when you graduate, bear in mind, mommy and daddy may not be giving you a brand new Rolls Royce. They may not be giving you a yacht or an apartment in Donald Trump's building in New York. But I say to them, I envy the situation you're in now. Because when young men and women came out of high school in the late 1930s and 40s, they didn't have to challenge their life to find a job. They had the service and a war facing them because there was a draft. I said, you have now the challenge of finding a work and a way of life. And I suggest something, and Princeton University has now stated this, and I've been saying this for 4 years. I think people coming out of school, high school, better off, don't go to college. Wait for 2 years. If you can't get a job, volunteer in your church or go overseas and give your time, just as years ago President Kennedy had people, the Peace Corps, give of yourself and learn the challenges of life. When you come back, you'll be better prepared to appreciate the richness of an education and have a greater direction in life. And do you know, Princeton University has now said, we feel young people are better off finding the challenges of the world. And maybe that's a prediction and a message I think is going to be part of life in the years to come.
Thank you, sir. A final question to you. Do you have a favorite quotation? And if so, what is it?
It is something that I end all of my performances with for the past 55 years. And I've said it all over the world and been quoted endlessly. And it simply refers not only to what I do, but the possibilities in life. People can doubt what they see on the stage because there are magic acts to fake things. But as Tom Hanks had written in the final moments of the great Buck Hauer movie are, to me, very special. And people have referred where he said, you know, Kreskin has never been shown to use stooges, electronic devices, all these tricks and what have you. And my remark about my career in life has simply been this. To those who believe, no explanation is necessary. To those who do not believe, no explanation is possible. And Barry, you know what? In the spirit of radio, I'm not going to say goodbye to you. Let's just say to be continued, okay?
And we'll have you in studio here in Kitchener, Ontario.
Take care, Barry.
Thank you, Mr. Amazing Kreskin. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Barry.
Bye-bye. My guest has been the Amazing Kreskin on the line from Montclair, New Jersey. My name is Barry Shanebaum. This is Perspectives. We broadcast on Faith, Hope, and Grace FM, Kitchener, Woodstock, and London, Ontario. Listen to Kanan singing Waving Flag when we come back. Roger Joycey in studio.
You have been listening to Perspectives with Barry Shanebaum on Faith FM and Hope FM, 94.3 in Kitchener and Woodstock, and on Grace FM, 105.9 in London, Ontario.
This has been Perspectives with Barry Shanebaum. You can find all our new episodes on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts. You can find episodes of When This Was a Radio Show on SoundCloud.com. Barry Shanebaum can be found on Facebook at Barry Shanebaum and on Instagram at BarryZS2018. Thank you for listening.